Welcome to We Are Technologies User Friendly with host Bill Sickens, Technology Architect.
And this is User Friendly 2.0. Before we get going with the show, I just want to mention something. We record on Wednesdays and air on Saturdays. So while we're actually sitting here recording, it is 9/11. And I just want to take a minute and remember the victims of that tragedy, as well as our first responders and everybody else that had their lives impacted in some way. We all remember where we were at that time. Never let it happen again and never forget. Joining me today on the show are my hosts, Jeremy and Gretchen Winkler, and my guest host, G.
Hi.
Welcome to User Friendly.
Hi there.
What's in the news today?
Robot helps perform first long-distance heart surgery. Now that sounds really cool.
This is an area where technology is really kind of coming together to improve people's lives. And what we have here is something that's been worked on for a while. And this is the first time that it's truly been successful, where they've used complete robotic equipment under the direction of a surgeon at a remote location to perform a surgery successfully. So the surgeon was 20 miles away when this test was done, and everything that was done in the surgical suite was completely by remote and over the cloud and that type of a system.
So these are like big arms and stuff, the robotic arms that are doing the work?
Yeah, that have all of the different instruments and things like that that are required. And you would have a local medic in the room and that type of a thing. But where this comes in really, really handy is remote locations where it's difficult to get a surgeon, emergencies, that type of thing. Now we have another option to where they can really help people get better or deal with these type of situations.
Wow.
YouTube plans big ad changes due to complaint filed with the FTC.
Online platforms like YouTube are becoming a much bigger deal now. Most of us get our media that way a lot more than we used to. So broadcast is still out there, but the online platforms don't have the same regulation. So basically, you can go online and post whatever you want and that type of a thing, which is good for the exchange of information. The problem is these things are coming into their own. You are starting to have issues that were dealt with by the FCC on broadcast media years ago in things like a focus of commercials on children or targeting a specific audience or doing things in a way that you shouldn't do. And that's where this is going with that. So what YouTube's doing now is when content's being uploaded, they ask what the target audience is. That's a new question that wasn't there before. And they're also changing their algorithm in such a way so that it doesn't target specific things to specific audiences when it shouldn't. The big deal and what's going on with this complaint was a show where they did not disclose that all of the toys that were being advertised on the shows and marketed to children were being sponsored by those companies. So on broadcast media, like if we review a book or something that's been provided to us, we're required to say that. Not the case online. And that's where this is headed, and that's where YouTube is changing their requirements so that it'll become a little bit more of a safe space for kids. Now, how this actually gets implemented is yet to see, but that's where this is headed.
Interesting. Okay. How about we've got a trade show from Apple? So let me know, what are the results of the Apple trade show?
So, G, you're an average, avid.
I'm an Apple guy.
You're an Apple guy. There's the word. I couldn't say it. So.
Yeah. I even like to eat them.
So, but. Yeah, there you go. There you go. Yeah, it seems to be the case with me.
Crunchy.
This week was the trade show. And in fact, we're going to talk about all of this in a lot more detail here right after the news. But they have come out with some interesting announcements and things that we weren't expecting. So hang on, and we'll come back to that in a little bit.
Texas says no to a ransom demand. What does that mean?
Ransomware is a big deal. And
big deal.
What ransomware is, for anybody that doesn't know, is the bad guys infect your computers, usually from an international source or something like that, for a larger company, and then say, if you want access to your data again, you got to pay us money. Usually that's done through Bitcoin or something else, and there's no guarantee that even if you do pay the ransom, they're going to unlock your information. This has become a huge problem. Happening all over the place, and the state of Texas is no exception. They've been dealing with this for most of the summer, trying to restore and do different things, but they finally come out and said, no, we're not going to pay the ransom. We're going to restore from backup and then secure the systems properly. So as we head in the direction of these type of things, and as this becomes more and more of the new normal, it's going to become extremely important to have a avenue plan B type scenario, because paying out the money, like I say, doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to do anything or that you'll ever get your system back. And if you do, it might be so screwed up that it doesn't work anyway.
And by the way, Texas isn't alone. There have been several cities over the last couple of years have been paralyzed for days.
Yeah, all over the country, all over the world.
And how does this stuff get into these systems? It's employees or people opening the wrong emails.
The wrong links,
yeah. And they get in there.
Yeah, that's the biggest way, is an email that tricks you into opening the link. You're busy, it's the workday, you click on it, and then it gets into the system. And you may not even know that it happened. It might sit there dormant for a little while or that type of a thing. And it's a really a issue. It's something that definitely cybersecurity is needing to deal with, and it is something that is a problem. But again, I think not paying the ransom is the first step. And, you know, certainly with a physical type of ransom situation, the government would never pay a ransom. So it does make sense that they're holding to those policies for this.
Hey, well, then here's some good news for some people who are upset. Global email scammers arrested.
Jeremy, this is actually a topic you were telling me about. You want to talk about it a little bit?
Sure. What we have is it's been a global sting where they actually arrested 281 people in 7 different countries who are involved in these email scams. We've got Nigeria, Turkey, the United States, and several other countries in the Middle East. So is one of them a Nigerian prince, do you think? that's the running joke.
I've been emailed, I am. So there you are, you know.
so these bunch of countries worked together to do this, correct? To do this.
Correct. It was a scam that went over several days where they went in and arrested everybody.
Right. So, okay. So hopefully that'll start to cut back, although there's always somebody to fill the spot, it seems.
Always.
So with this stuff in the news this week is the Apple show. And from that Apple show, we've had a couple of announcements, some of them actually kind of surprising. Now, G, you use iPhone.
I do, and I have Apple computers.
And you have Apple computers, so you're in that ecosystem.
I have 3 Apple computers.
Right. Do any of them work?
All of them work.
Okay, let me ask you a different question. Do you know how to use any of them?
Not as well as I should. Yeah, I can use them. I've been using Apple since 1990, so I'm real familiar with Apple.
So that makes sense.
Which is probably why I keep buying Apple, because everything I do has been Apple from 1990.
And there's a progression. Well, it is September, and September is the common time for these announcements. Getting ready to start going into the holiday season, and this year it is iPhone 11. iOS 13, we're still synchronizing those numbers together. But coming out of the show, there were some interesting things that were announced. One of them is a price drop and a new system to allow you to trade in your old phone. Gee, you know about that.
That's shocked, because I've heard how much these, you know, $1,000, $1,200, whatever. So I get this email from Apple that says I can trade in my iPhone 7 and buy the basic iPhone 11 for $399, which is not, and you know, so much a month if you want to do that. Then I can get the top of the line 11 for $599 if I trade in my phone. And I was just, when I read that, I was going, that can't be right. What's the hook here?
Part of it is that we are seeing a little bit of a transition away from Apple products. If you look at the numbers, it's not a lot, but it's enough that they're worried about it. So I think that's part of what's going on here, because this is the first time I'm aware of that there's actually been this kind of a pricing thing recently. A long time ago, Apple did it, but it hasn't been something we've seen in many years, actually. And the thing about it is the other thing that came out of it is if you're not an Apple user, you can actually get the introductory smartphone at $799, which is also a $200 price drop on the iPhone X.
So are they going to drop price of their computers, too? Like, I have a MacBook Air, a MacBook Pro. And the iMac, are they going to drop the computer prices?
The computer announcements are actually a separate conference, but what they did talk about here was the Apple Watch, and that's another piece of technology that a lot of us use and like, and the smartwatch has also seen some changes in that respect. The pricing, not so dramatically, but we are definitely seeing some upgrades and some very interesting new features that I think a lot of people are going to like. So what came out of the show is good. The other thing that they were throwing in, which is, again, Apple generally does not compete on money, but you get a free year of Apple TV if you buy one of these products. So that's another little bit of an unusual thing that was thrown in.
The Apple TV is for a really low price. What was it, $4.99 they said on the news?
Yeah, they're coming in. They're trying to compete with a lot of these other over-the-top internet-based television services.
You know, like Netflix and Amazon. So, they've got like this great price.
Yeah.
I've been seeing a lot of announcements about Apple movies. In fact, there's one I wanted to review.
Yeah, and it's actually interesting because we are starting to see movies come out of these movie studios that you wouldn't expect. Some of the best movies coming up in the next year or two are out of Netflix, but you also are seeing them on Amazon and as G said, Apple TV. The other thing that they're trying to compete directly with is broadcast television, So things like your PlayStation View or your Comcast or your Sling TV, these type of environments, you actually can get your regular channels that way, cut the cord completely, and it's $5 a month, at least to start with. It's a little more for more content, but that's where they're headed with that. Alrighty, this is User-Friendly 2.0. We're going to come back after the break with an interview with Congressman Greg Walden, who is spearheading the legislation to stop the menacing robocalls. Tells us a little bit about what he's doing, and later in the show, we have an interview with the Rose City Comic-Con founder, which we're going to be covering live from the floor next week. This is User-Friendly 2.0. We'll be back. Welcome back. This is User-Friendly 2.0. Send us your questions. Send us your comments. One User-Friendly on social media, theanswerportland.com online. Joining us today is a very special guest, Congressman Greg Walden, who has been working on the robocall legislation that we've been talking about on the show, and a lot of you have sent in questions about that. Welcome to the show.
Hey, it's good to be with you. Thanks.
First question for you. Robocalls, they're a big problem. What is going on?
Well, you know, it's a couple of things. First of all, let me give you a number. 47.8 billion. That's the number of illegal robocalls placed nationwide last year in America. 47.8 billion. Last month alone, Americans received an estimated 4.8 billion. Again, illegal robocalls. So these aren't the ones that tell you your prescription's ready or, you know, something like these. These are scam artists. These are the ones often operating overseas, which makes them hard to go get and shut down. That are trying to steal your data, steal your credit card information. They're the ones that Cancer Center in Florida before our committee said used their phone number, spoofed their phone number to call patients and then ask for personal data. And you can imagine if you're getting treated for cancer to Cancer Center and that number pops up as the Cancer Center and they said, oh, by the way, our records are missing your fill in the blank, Social Security number, date of birth, whatever. You're going to give it to them, aren't you? And it turns out total scam.
Do most people respond to that? I mean, is this actually a very good way to get private information like that?
Yes, it works, or they wouldn't do it. And it's virtually no cost to them because they're using IP circuitry, so they're doing it over the internet. It's not the old, you know, your grandpa's days of, you know, calling overseas, delay in talk, and, right. and a $10 a minute bill. This is all free, right? It's all over the internet. It's all IP. And they just, it's a numbers game. It's an odds game. And they target seniors. They target the vulnerable. They get very, very sophisticated. I've had people tell me that their own numbers have been used to call them. So it looks like your own number calling you. It is both a nuisance. It is a fraud. And in some cases, it probably costs lives. I talked to a person in my district who had a friend who got called, was on a donor list for an organ donation, and got the call, but thought it was a scam, and let it go to voicemail, didn't answer it, didn't listen to the voicemail for a day, and actually they were calling to say, your number's up, we got something, come in now.
Oh, wow.
And by that point, it was too late. So they go back on the list. And so this is really serious stuff, and there are a couple ways to go after it, and that's what we're trying to do.
And this leads us to your legislation. What will it do?
Well, it does a couple of things. It requires that phone carriers implement call authentication technology. So since the time we put this in and have been working it, they've basically reached an agreement with Ajit Pai at the FCC and state's attorneys general to do this. They have the technology behind the curtain, if you will, to determine that number that purports to be from the Cancer Center or, you know, wherever is not. They can determine that with their technology, and therefore they can use that technology to identify spoofed and fake calls and also have blocking technology. So it allows, it would require them to use that authentication technology. It would allow them to offer call blocking services to consumers at no additional cost. And consumers could have an opt-out. Now, I don't know why you'd want that necessarily. Maybe you like getting robocalls. it would empower the Federal Communications Commission and law enforcement to enforce the law and quickly go after these scammers. And it requires the FCC to report back to Congress on the success of their efforts. You know, this is a real serious problem in lives of Americans. There are some reports that upwards of half the calls we now receive on our mobile devices are illegal spoof robocalls. And so it interrupts your day. It interrupts your meals. You know, my wife called me the other day and said, I just got this weird call about somebody breaching our Social Security account. And, you know, what should I do? I said, nothing. It's fraud. And she said, well, that's what I thought. I mean, I got one about a credit card alert, and it turned out that was a fraud. And so they're very sophisticated because there's a lot of money behind it. I would argue in some cases there are state actors behind it. There are countries that get their money through scams like this. So it's highly sophisticated.
You know, most of what I've read on this, and I've done a lot of writing on this topic, and there are state actors involved, and the purpose is to disrupt. So your legislation has been introduced. What do you think? Does it pass?
Well, in July, the House passed it 429-3, and I'm still trying to figure out why the three voted no, but maybe, again, they enjoy all the interruptions and calls. But yeah, so it has a big bipartisan majority coming out of the House. We spent a lot of time on it to get it right because, you know, we loosely use the term robocalls, but if you're not careful, basically what you do on your mobile device where you push a button and it dials the number for you, technically that's a robocall because it's automatically dialing it. And so we had to be really careful to differentiate illegal robocalls from legitimate ones. And again, the legitimate one is to say your prescription's ready. You know, it's an auto dial and it's efficient and it cuts down costs and gives you the information you need. We don't want to ban that. But on the other hand, we want to go after the bad actors and the scammers and the spoofers.
Now, with most of the robocalls, or a lot of them at least, originating outside of the country, do you think the legislation in doing the caller ID authentication is going to be able to affect international as well as domestically placed robocalls?
Yeah, I wish I could sit here on this interview and say we got this done. But this cybersecurity, and I'd put this in that basket, is a never-ending battle. There's no one solution. And so I think this will work and work for a while, but these are very sophisticated actors, and whatever we do, they will try to counter. And so what we need to do is not get too focused on the specific solution to today's problem, but instead basically say, use whatever the latest technology is to stop the latest threat, and not tie the hands of the companies to a certain technology or a certain procedure or a certain requirement. But basically, use your technology, block these calls, and go ahead. I met with the CEO of AT&T. I've talked to the CEO of Sprint. They are ready to go. They want to make sure that Congress is behind them when they do it. Because, you know, Bill, you can imagine if they're blocking these, somebody's probably going to make a mistake somewhere and block a call that should have probably gone through, right? And so, I mean, that'll happen, I think. And we got to make sure when it does that we don't all lose our minds, because meanwhile, there are 47.8 billion calls a year that shouldn't happen.
Right, absolutely. And that's, you know, and that's the whole thing, trying to figure that out. We're going to have to go to a quick break here, and then we'll come right back and talk about this a little bit more. Congressman, thank you. We'll be right back. This is User Friendly 2.0. Welcome back. This is User Friendly 2.0. On the line with me is Congressman Greg Walden, who we are having a conversation with about robocalls and his legislation to stop this menace. And we were just talking about the numbers and what's coming in and not blocking legitimate calls that you do want to get. So as with technology, I think a lot of this is going to be evolving. I guess my next question to you would be, right now today, as things are being done to prepare for all of this, what if somebody gets a robocall today, what's the best way to deal with it?
Well, I'll tell you what I do with them is if they don't show up in my address book, you know, so it pops up a name, I let it go to voicemail. And 99% of the time, the illegal scammers don't leave a voicemail. I did get one the other day, and it was in Chinese. So whoever was behind that scam must have plugged in the wrong country code. But, you know, that's what I do. I just let them go to voicemail. And if it's somebody that is really trying to get a hold of me and has my number, they'll leave a voicemail. In my town halls, I've done 40 this year across Oregon. I point out, Dave, do you get the foreign ones? And I said, I got one the other day, 20 hands go up or 50 or whatever, because we're all getting those. I said, I got one the other day. It said plus 30-1 Greece. And I don't know anybody in Greece, right? So I let it go to voicemail. Later in the day, I looked, it was a 2-minute voicemail. It's like, wow, I wonder what that is. So I pulled it up and I listened to it, and it was Vice President Mike Pence aboard Air Force Two trying to reach me on an issue. So there's, there's some foreign calls you should take, because it's really hard to call back Air Force Two. And so I tell you that because there are important calls you shouldn't miss, but now we're all getting conditioned not to answer them unless we recognize through our own address books the numbers. And so there's still a big problem here. We got to get after it. In the area code 503, you all have had 17.7 million robocalls last month and 151.5 million this year. On the east side, the rural areas in Oregon, 541 area code, we received an estimated 13 million robocalls last month alone and 106.8 so far this year. So, yeah, they can give
sure
us these stats.
Did
you get them?
I am pretty sure I got them all. I get 10.
Yep, I got a few.
Yeah. I want to ask you a quick question kind of related to this, but I do a lot of writing about cybersecurity, and it seems like this country is under attack. Our infrastructures are under attack.
Yep.
What is Congress looking to do about that? We don't seem to have this coordinated effort to really solve this problem, because I think the next 911, and we're doing this interview on 911, the next 911 may very well be a cyber attack.
I'm glad you said that. There's actually a lot more going on than meets the eye or gets in the press. I've been in a lot of classified briefings here and elsewhere around the country. And you're right. This is probably single biggest threat the country faces. It is pernicious. It's real. It's happening every day. There are threats to our electric grid, to our pipelines, to our communication systems. And there are really bad but sophisticated actors out there. And obviously, a number of them are state-sponsored that are very aggressively mapping our networks, trying to embed software on our networks, and we're watching it. The good news is we're aware of it, and we have some really, really talented people at NSA and elsewhere that know how to do this, and I think do it better than anybody else in the world. And so we're not alone in this fight. The public policy issue is the ability to share information between the sort of government intelligence sector, if you will, and the private sector, and not disclose methods and sources as a result, and therefore shut off your intelligence gathering capability. So that's kind of the tight line that we walk. But there's a lot of collaboration and coordination with the utilities, with the pipeline companies, telecommunication companies. There's actually a lot of legislative work that's been done in this space. We get briefings on a regular basis. It's in every sector of our economy. And some of it is menacing. Some of it is pure intellectual property theft. Some of it is classic and traditional espionage and information gathering. And some of it could be very, very destructive. So it's across the whole line. And it's the biggest threat we have. In the military side of the ledger, if you will, there's nobody more powerful than we are in the world, with ships and planes and tanks and armies and we stack up way above any other country in terms of that capability. But you know what? To do cyber warfare, you just need a bunch of smart people in a room with a computer and access to high-speed internet.
Yeah, and that's really the thing about it, because you don't have the physical location. So Congressman, if somebody wants to get more information, is there a place they can go online and get your information?
They can go to our website. And look there in terms of that. And it's www.walden.house.gov. So walden.house.gov would be a good place to go.
All right. Thank you so much for your time today, Congressman. This has just been a great interview. And it really helps people to know that something is being done. And thank you for doing that. All right, Congressman, again, and have a great rest of your day.
You're welcome. You too. Take care.
All right, bye-bye. Welcome back. This is User Friendly 2.0. Joining me now is Ron from the Rose City Comic Con. Ron, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
I understand you are the founder and director of Rose City Comic Con.
Yeah, that's right. I started this little thing about, 7 years ago, and it's grown into what it is now.
Oh, wow. This will be our first year to see it, so we're really looking forward to it. Tell us a little bit about the convention.
It's your typical pop culture fan event. So you will have everybody from celebrities like Lou Ferrigno and Cary Elwes to comic book greats like Kelly Sue DeConnick and Greg Rucka, publishers like Dark Horse and Oni Press, and of course some of the best gaming around with Portland Retro Gaming Expo there, running a retro arcade, and Rainy Day Games there, running tabletop gaming with Cascade Games. So all of those folks that love Pokemon and Magic can come out and play in tournaments. And then we have something for the little kids, too. We have a Rose City Junior area where we'll be running rock climbing walls, and DreamWorks will be playing films and all kinds of activities for kids.
That sounds absolutely incredible. So this is definitely an event to bring the family.
Yeah. We think of ourselves a little differently than some other events. We really gear ourselves towards families, however they're made up, to come out to the event and enjoy it and make memories together. When I started Rose City Comic Con, I had a 6-year-old and a 9-year-old when I first started putting this thing together. And the one thing that we always noticed when we went to San Diego or any other convention is that there just wasn't much for kids to do. It was really geared towards people in their, mid to late 20s all the way through their 40s, but just nothing for kind of sub 10-year-olds. And so we made a conscientious decision that we were going to build an event that was going to also build fans for the future.
Oh, that sounds absolutely incredible. And I know one thing that I and my team here love to do is cosplay. Is this a big part of Rose City?
It's an amazing part of Rose City. It's a huge part. We get cosplayers from around the country that come out to the event. I like to believe that our cosplay is on par with the biggest conventions in the world. We actually run a costume contest. We get about 6 times the entries that we can actually run across the stage. So we do prejudging on Saturdays at 11 a.m. And from there, we get people across the stage on Saturday night at 8 p.m. And it's a big event, but Saturday is full of pageantry all day long. People walking around in their cosplay, debuting new cosplay. So it's something that people really take a lot of pride in. And for somebody like me, I don't ever dress up besides as a convention director. So for the rest of for somebody like me and for the rest of people that don't cosplay, it's a pretty amazing spectacle to see and really appreciate.
Now, it sounds like seeing the thing, it'll be about 3 hours here from when we are. So there's still time to get down and actually see the costume contest. I would imagine that the signups are done at that point. But I know that in the past when I've seen cosplays and seen the masquerades and things that go along with them, just even if you're not in the show, it's absolutely worth sitting down and going to and seeing what people put together. What do you think are going to be some of the amazing things you see this year?
Oh, geez, I don't know. I never like to speculate on what kind of cosplay I'm going to see because it's always different than what I expect. So I think you'll see a little of something from every different fandom for sure. That's probably the most politically correct answer I can give.
I think that totally makes sense to me. Let's talk about past years and a few of the costumes. I know there's been some outstanding ones. What are some of the ones that have kind of stayed in your mind from that?
There's a really good couple of cosplays a few years ago. There was that I really like. It was a Morticia and Wednesday Addams. It was two cosplayers dressed up, and they didn't look like the Addams Family characters, but they looked like the Chaz Addams art, which to me I thought was pretty spectacular because Hollywood took a little liberty with the costumes and everything, and Chaz Addams, his art, that really inspired the cartoon strip, way back in the day. To see cosplayers that were on par with that, that was really impressive.
Now, that sounds incredible. Now earlier you talked a little bit about celebrity guests. I mentioned a few of the people that are going to be there. Tell us a little bit more about that end of things.
It's a place where you can come and you can see the likes of Carrie Elwes and Princess Bride cast with Chris Sarandon, who, by the way, was Jack Skellington in Tim Burton's Nightmare Before Christmas. Wallace Shawn, who's Rex from all the Toy Story films. These are all, you know, folks that you can meet on site and say hello to. And, you know, if you want to get a photo with them, you want to get an autograph. We have Weird Science reunion that's taking place. So we have Anthony Michael Hall, we have Kelly LeBrock, Alon Mitchell Smith. You know, there's really a lot of different things for a lot of different folks. Weird Al's going to be there. Zachary Levi, who's Shazam. So we try and make sure we cater to different aspects of different fandoms. And I think the biggest fandom that we always see year after year are the people who love Doctor Who. And Chris Eccleston, who is the ninth Doctor, so the new Doctor since they relaunched the series, this will be his first U.S. appearance ever. Will be at Rose City Comic Con this weekend. And then his companion from that show will also be here, and that's Rose. She played Rose, Billy Piper.
We have a lot of hooligans that listen to the show, and I did not know that until right now, so that is absolutely incredible. The Ninth Doctor, first appearance in the United States. So what gave you the idea to put all this together? You said you've been doing it for 8 years. How did you sit down and say, I'm going to do a pop culture convention?
Yeah, so I was on a trip. I'd gone to a couple different conventions. Like I mentioned earlier, we had noticed that there wasn't a lot for kids. We were at San Diego Comic-Con, and my son just innocently asked one day, you know, when we were driving back, how come we don't have a comic book convention in Portland? To that, I responded, I don't know. Maybe I'll start one. And that's what kind of led here. I had about a 21-hour drive home. And, you know, the more I thought about it, I don't know if there's a lack of sleep or a lack of caffeine, but, you know, if I was having some sort of fever dream about starting a convention. But by the time I got back in Portland, I was convinced I was going to do it. Started talking to a few folks, and one thing led to another, and here we are.
My goodness. Did you have any major hurdles getting it started?
Well, I think like with anything, you know, there's the fear of the unknown. Is anybody going to show up? I remember 4th of July weekend back in 2012 and thinking we have not sold enough tickets for this thing to be financially viable. And I remember discussing it with my friend. We were vacationing at the beach, you know, for 4th of July weekend. And I thought, you know, maybe I should just pull the plug on this thing, you know. You know, at the end of the day, as we drank a couple beers and sat around a bonfire, you know, at the end of the day, I just thought, well, this is just a little, it's just money we're talking about. I might be out a little bit of money, but thankfully I was in a position at the time that I could, you know, I basically funded the event out of pocket, and I wasn't taking loans, I wasn't doing that kind of stuff. So the risk was really just, you know, not recouping my investment. So I thought I might have just been throwing the most expensive party ever for myself. And I remember I needed 751 people to show up. And originally the budget had been based on 750 people, but I bought a three hole punch. So that pushed me to 751. And I remember Saturday morning, I walked outside of the hotel, went to the ballroom, and there was a line. And I didn't know, I thought there were people waiting for the max. Oh, but they were waiting for the show to open, you know. So it was good. I mean, we had a really strong walk up. We had a really strong attendance. The fire marshal told us we couldn't put anybody else in the building on that Saturday. And all said and done, we ended up with about a little over 4,100 people.
Oh my goodness. On 750. That is so cool. Well, on behalf of the audience, I am so glad you stuck with it.
Thanks. Yeah, we are too. I mean, it's been a lot of fun. It's been a labor of love. You know, we've got a lot of friends involved. It's turned into a real business, so it's not without its pitfalls sometimes. Sure. You know, we're managing budgets, and you know, we're looking at expense lines. But you know, it's something that I also like to think about as being a little bit of a community service in a lot of ways for Portland. Not necessarily the con itself, but I think there's a lot of people that, you know, this is their Super Bowl, this is their what they save money for, this is their vacation. And I think it brings a lot of people together, friends, family, cosplay groups, people that are looking for their people, you know, people they feel comfortable around. So, in a lot of ways, you know, I think that when I'm at the show, running the show, I always try and pause and just kind of look around and make sure everybody's enjoying themselves. And, cause really at the end of the day, if it isn't fun, then we're doing something wrong.
Ron, just a second. We're going to have to go to break. And right after, I'm going to get you to give us website, how to get tickets, and all of that type of information. We'll be right back after the break. Welcome back to User Friendly. On the line with me is Ron from the Rose City Comic Con founder. Ron, welcome back. There's still a whole day left for anybody that wants to attend the show. How do they find you online and how do they get tickets?
Yeah, go to rosecitycomiccon.com. So that's Rose City Comic Con with two C's, Comic Con. And you can find tickets on there. You can go to your local retailers. Listen, if you want to save money, go to Cosmic Monkey, go to Comics Adventure, go to I Like Comics in Vancouver, go to our website and look for local badge retailers, because badge is there in order to support our retailers and reseller partners. We put them in the stores and you'll save up to $35 if you're buying a weekend pass by going there and picking one up. Plus, you don't have to wait in line to exchange your ticket for a badge. But if you're not in the local area, go to our website. You can find us on Facebook, Rose City Comic Con, Twitter, Instagram, Rose City CC. All of those will get you back to buying tickets. Tickets are still available. We're almost sold out of weekend passes. So if you're thinking about buying a weekend pass, do it soon.
All right, Ron, thank you so much. Anything else you want to tell our audience?
No, you know, the only thing I would tell the audience is come to the show, have a good time, you know, meet new people. Say hello to your favorite media guests, your favorite comic guests, and most importantly, if you see somebody in a red shirt that says crew on it, tell them thanks. They gave up their weekend to make sure you have a good time.
I know I will be doing that. And thank you so much, Ron, Rose City Comic Con. Enjoy it this weekend.
So that interview, of course, was recorded a little earlier in the week, and it's kind of fun to actually see the event. Now, next week, we're going to be bringing some interviews live from the floor. We've talked to a few great people. We're going to talk to a few more great people tomorrow. Costume contest is tonight at 8 o'clock, so you still have time to get out and see it and get in and check out the masquerade and what's going on. A lot of great cosplays this year. So, Jeremy, Gretchen, what are you guys doing?
Well, I've been having fun looking at all the celebrities and checking out all the cool shopping.
Yeah, shopping would make sense on your end. And Gretchen?
Oh, just everything. I just take the whole thing in.
Yeah. That's the same thing with me. I can't wait to get the interviews out there and got some interesting information. And coming up in future weeks, we have some other things. We've got the VR conference coming up. We're going to be talking about what virtual reality is here in a segment beforehand. Conference itself is October 14th and 15th, down in San Francisco. We got to see it a couple of years ago, so it's going to be fun to see where the technology has changed on that front. A lot of things are coming into their own. We have wireless VR now. We're using it in a lot of different things. Games is still a big part of it, but not the only part of it. Medical field, all of those different technologies. We're starting to see augmented reality is still a little bit out there, but the true virtual reality environment is being perfected and it works well.
What is the augmented reality?
Okay, the difference between the two, just really quick here, augmented reality is where you see the environment around you and it's being supplemented, like a HUD display or something. So in your glasses, you would see the temperature of the room or you'd look at a building and see what it is. Virtual reality completely removes the actual environment and places you in a virtual environment.
Okay.
So that's the difference between the two. Also coming up is the Global Gaming Expo in Las Vegas. Chaz is going to be on the floor there live covering that. Not so much video games, but gaming. So our gambling, what we see in casinos, the new technologies on that end, and a lot of different things are happening there and changes are being made. And plus, it is September. Time to start looking into the holidays. We're going to have a show for Halloween and some other things later in the year. So this is User Friendly 2.0, keeping you safe on the cutting edge.
User Friendly 2.0 is copyright 2019 User Friendly Media Group, Inc. The views and opinions expressed in this show are those of the host and not necessarily User Friendly Media Group, Inc. or this station. Music licensing by BMI. Hosting provided by WeAreTechnology.com. Podcast available at TheAnswerPortland.com or UserFriendlyShow.com.